Good evening. It's my pleasure to welcome all of you to our JEP Identity Lecture. I will tell you that in one respect, our lecture tonight does set a record. We usually have, in preparing a lecture and getting out all of the publicity, we usually have, I'd say, anywhere from 2 to 4 weeks to get the word out. This particular lecture set a record in terms of the shortest amount of time that we had to get the word out. We were planning on the lecture for about a week from now, and we started working on it, but the way the dates fell into place, we had approximately 1 week, and I was deliberating whether or not it was wise to go ahead with trying to get the word out about a lecture in 1 week's time, but we went for it. And it's a delight to see that from the inception of this idea 1 week ago, we have a full house. I guess that does say something about the fact that there is a real appetite for Torah study in this world today. Having a full house, it's a great schus. We certainly want to acknowledge the hospitality of Karen and Mitch Kuflick, our guests. Now, one thought that I gleaned from almost four decades of having a very special individual as my mentor, my Rebbe, Rev Alter Hedoch Leibowitz of blessed memory, was the idea that if an individual is privileged to study Torah and to live Torah, that creates a responsibility to share Torah with others. And I know that Karen and Mitch are two individuals who they exemplify this idea. They are very excited about the fact that they have personally, together with their family, been able to embrace Torah. And they take every opportunity that they can to share Torah with their fellow Jew. And this is an address that has become a location where many Torah events are held, many different organizations are here. This is our first time that we are here for a group event. And we want to express our gratitude to you both. And we certainly want to wish both of you, together with your children, that our presence here tonight and the Torah thoughts that we will share will be a source of bracha and nachas for your entire family. Tonight's lecture is a memorial lecture in memory of Rabbi Yaakov Dietsch of blessed memory. Many of you in this room know who it is that I'm referring to. Many of you are very close to him. Rabbi Yaakov Dietsch was the individual who, even though I never had a brother, have a couple of sisters, but I grew up without a brother, and I often say that the closest that I got to having a brother was Rabbi Yaakov Dietsch. We were chavrusas, we were study partners in yeshiva, we were very, very close, and Rabbi Dietsch, during the last 5 years of his life, was the co-director of JEP of Westchester, together with myself. He had a critical role, a key role in terms of Torah dissemination and bringing many people under the wings of JEP. And at his funeral, when he passed away some 13 years ago, I announced at the funeral that we were going to name our organization, JEP of Westchester, the Rabbi Yaakov Dietsch Jewish Education Program of Westchester. So there's no question about it that his neshama is hovering over this room this evening, and we certainly hope that his neshama will go even higher in Olam Haba, in the world of eternity, where he undoubtedly is at this present time. Yehi Zichro Baruch. His memory should be a source of blessing for us all. It is my great pleasure tonight, Baruch Lachaim, to introduce to you an individual who I met for the very first time about 45 minutes ago, Rabbi Yoni Zakatinsky. We've been in touch. actually we've been touching about an idea that you're going to hear more about this evening, by Zakatinsky, he's associated with Project Inspire, which is under the umbrella of Eshet Torah. And a couple of months ago, I was approached by one of Rabbi Zakatinsky's colleagues about the possibility of our holding a JEP, Joint Project Inspire Shabbaton, and it sounded like a fascinating idea. As a result of that discussion, we started to draw our plans, and one component in our plan was that we would be privileged to hear from Rabbi Yoni Zakatinsky. He is an individual who has made his mark in this world. He founded a seminary for women in Jerusalem. He was the principal of a very important high school for boys, the Torah Academy of Brooklyn, TAB as it is known. Presently, Rabbi Zakatinsky has chosen to channel his very special ability and talent in the area of trying to set up the events that we're going to hear more about this evening. He is also very active in the field of real estate. So he's in work. He's actually, I guess it's fair to say that he's actively involved both in real estate and in the real estate. So without any further ado, it is my great privilege to present to you all Rabbi Yoni Zakatinsky.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Zakatinsky. I'll move into the ground a little bit, if you don't mind. Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi Zajcik. And it's my pleasure to be here, and I want to really thank Mitch and Karen Kuflick for opening up their home. I had a brief conversation with Mrs. Kuflick a few days ago. I want to acknowledge the fact that Rabbi Bienenfeld is here. We go back, my brother and Rabbi Bienenfeld go back many, many years. I've met Rabbi Bienenfeld on many occasions, at weddings, his dancing, etc. And it's a real pleasure to be here. I do want to thank Rabbi Zajcik for, and I'll talk about the program a little later, but for engaging me to come and speak to you. So I'll tell you a little, I will speak a little about myself so at least you understand who the gentleman in front of you is and who's speaking to you. I was born and raised in New Haven, Connecticut. I went to Yeshiva, New York. Simultaneously, I went to college, got my bachelor's, my master's, and decided that I wanted to enter the world of Jewish education. I also wanted to enter the world of business. So subsequently, during my lifetime, I have juggled both. I feel very strongly about the concept of outreach. And my wife and I live in Brooklyn, New York, and we have 6 children. 3 of them are married. I just had another grandson just 2 days ago. The bris will be, everybody's invited if you'd like to come. Good bagels, good. The bris is on Monday. In fact, I was in the hospital the other day, and one of the nurses came over and says, "What's his name?" So he goes, "No name yet." So she looks at me, "Boy, that's a novel name." You know, she thought that there was, his name was no name yet. So try to explain it to them. Anyway, so be it as it may, thank God. So we have 5 daughters, 3 are married, 2 live up in Waterbury, Connecticut, and I always pass the hutch going up, and one lives in Far Rockaway with her husband. 2 of my children are presently in Israel. One is in seminary, my daughter, and my son is in yeshiva. And then we have the lone survivor at home. She's 14 years old. I don't know where she is right now, but my wife is up in Connecticut helping my daughter. She's wandering the streets and ask what kind of rabbi I am. I have no idea. Be it as it may, I'm happy to be here tonight. And tonight I'd like to touch upon a little bit about the concept of the period that we're in right now between Passover and the holiday of Shavuot, which is 7 weeks, and what we're trying to accomplish during that time period. We're all aware of the historical data and the historical story of the students of a great sage named Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva had thousands upon thousands of students, and they had a tremendous yeshiva. I'm not going into the history of Rabbi Akiva as to who he was, but the one thing you have to know is that ultimately you'll see that men during this time period, some men don't shave. There's no weddings during the time period of the Omer, of this time period. And the question is why? Why don't we have it? So there's a period of mourning because thousands upon thousands of students of Rabbi Akiva, because they didn't give honor to one another, if you know the historical data, the history of the story, since they didn't give honor to one another, so there was a plague. And the plague wiped out thousands upon thousands of students. Now, if you were to tell me that I was a teacher, and ultimately my students, now you're talking about one student, you're not talking about two students, you're talking about thousands of students, passed away because they didn't give respect to the other person, whatever that was, respect, ultimately, I would say I was a failure. What did Rabbi Akiva do? He didn't feel as a failure. He started a new yeshiva. Because Rabbi Akiva, if you understand the story of Rabbi Akiva, of who he was, that he was an individual who didn't have any background, no knowledge. He walks by a well. He walks by a waterfall, and he sees a drop of water dripping on a rock, and it's dripping and dripping and dripping, and every day it's dripping. He goes, you know what? If that rock can have a hole bored through it because there's a drop of water going through it every day, so the consistency of the concept of Torah, if I learn every day a drop and another drop and another drop, so then it could also permeate me. Because I don't know anything, and I could become the great scholar as Rabbi Akiva became. And by the way, and that's why, if you look in the Talmud, it's always Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Akiva, because he understood the concept of consistency, regularity, doing it on a regular basis. But he was a positive person, because he understood that there's a concept of positivity. So tonight I'd like to talk about the concept of working on ourselves, working on our relationships, because that's what got us into this mess. Because the people didn't have a consistency of the relationships. So that's what we do during Sfira, during this time period, to work on our relationships, to make ourselves better people between us and ourselves, better people between us and our spouses, and better people between us and our children, and ultimately, better people between fellow Jews. So tonight I'd like to talk about those three concepts, triangle, etc. Obviously, if we're parents, we'll understand we have to be better parents. We also have to be better children, and it all falls into that realm. I'd like to start out with the following story. The following story took place from a group of Israeli soldiers who graduated the Israeli army. Now, I don't know if you probably know this, and we all see this in the magazines. We hear the stories about Israeli soldiers who go through the trial and tribulations of the Israeli army, and then they decide to travel. So they go to places like Nepal, Tibet, India, the Far East, because it's cheaper than the United States. And ultimately, also, they feel they're going to find spirituality. Whether they find it, whether they don't, that's not the discussion tonight. So there was a group of soldiers who decided they didn't have enough money to go to Tibet or Nepal or Thailand, but they're going to spend their time going up north, go camping out in Israel, we're going to go and take a fishing trip, etc. This story is told over to a rabbi who is entering a cab, and the cab driver in Israel is this gentleman who doesn't seem to be dressed the part, and he wants to just talk to the rabbi. So he says, Rav, ani rotzeh lagid lecha mashehu, which means in Hebrew, Rabbi, I want to tell you the following story. And he tells him how he got out of the army, decides to go up north, and he says, and we went on this camping trip. And you know, we were camping, and we took our fishing rods, and we took our tents, and we took, you know, our barbecues, and we had the most phenomenal experience. And then on the last night, we were sitting around the campfire, and suddenly from one of the tents, my best friend, Avi, screams out a scream like I never heard before in my life. And we run into the tent, and there's Avi. He's telling the story to the rabbi. He says, there's my friend Avi being attacked by a boa constrictor. So now we all know that a boa, nobody wants to meet a boa, especially in the nice trees over here. But a boa takes its prey, and it winds around it, and it squeezes it until it dies, and then it devours it. That's the way a boa works. So there's Avi. He's being squeezed to death. These guys are sitting there. These are tough Israeli soldiers, and they're saying, what are we going to do? So one starts banging the one on the side of the head. The other one's going in, throwing rocks at it. The other one pulls out his gun and says, let me shoot it. He says, you can't do that. You're going to kill Avi. Because he's dying anyways. So one guy gets smart. He says, you know, Avi, you turn it blue. You're going to die. What does a Jew do when he dies? You say, Shema. So he says, say Shema. So he starts saying, and these are not observant guys, but they know Shema. Because every Jew knows Shema. Because at the end, you know, you got to turn to the Creator. And he turns and he says, Shema Yisrael, Shem Lokeinu, Hashem Echad. And he tells the rabbi this, he says, you won't believe what happened. Suddenly, out of nowhere, he says Shema, and the snake just unwinds itself, and he slithers away into the forest, never to be seen again. And he goes, and you can't believe what happened to my friend Avi, Rabbi. You know what happened to my friend Rabbi? You know what happened to him? Oh, you should see his wife. She's so religious. And he started being so religious. And he went and, you know, sent his kids to school. And it was because of the snake. All because of the snake. So the rabbi's looking at him, who doesn't seem to be so, I'll call the word religious, I'm not being judgmental, but he doesn't look the part. And he says to him, Umaitcha, what happened to you? So he looks at him, and you know, you could chuckle from it, but it's a commentary. He says, it happened to him, it didn't happen to me. But that's life. Because events happen in our lives, or our friends' lives, or people around us, that there are messages. And the question is, if we internalize those messages, and when things happen to us, we always say, oh, I got to change. When things happen to our families, we say, oh, I wish I could have done this and this. Things happen to my friends, oh, I wish I could have done this and this. I should have been better. I should have done this. I should have done that. As the Rambam, as Maimonides says the following. Listen to the Maimonides. Maimonides writes, Maimonides writes the following. If you go to war against another nation, you're going to war. Now tell West Point this, but listen to the Rambam, listen to Maimonides. You go to war against another nation. You surround them. You're not allowed, as the Rambam, Maimonides says, you're not allowed to surround them by all four walls. You can only surround them by three. You tell West Point that. They say, you're crazy. What kind of war are you fighting? These are the Jews fight wars. No. The Rambam understood the following, something about human persona. That if you back somebody against the wall and there's no escape, they're going to fight. They're going to give it their all. So give them an out. Let them run. And you'll conquer them and move forward. See, when things happen to us, when our back's against the wall, so we make differences in our lives. We change things. When you know that you have a problem with a relationship, you're going to say, oh, I got to change a little bit. Oh, my kid's having a problem. Where have I been? My wife this, my husband this. Where have you been? So what happens is that the human persona says, oh, now's the time to do it. We're discussing tonight before it gets to that point. And not that something happened to them. It happens to all of us. Everything that we experience in life happens to all of us. So therefore tonight, what I'd like to speak about and getting into the depths of this is the Midah of Aaron HaKohen, of Aaron. And we just read in the Parsha last week about how Aaron, who is the high priest, has to do certain rituals, his children, he has to teach his children how to do it, etc. What do you know about Aaron? What is the Mishnah? What is the commentary? What is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Ethics of Our Fathers? What does it say about Aaron? Anybody know? What was his characteristic? Who was he? Yes. Good. Rodei Shalom. He was a peacemaker. What else do you know about him? Anybody's a Kohen here? Ohev Shalom. The Rodei Shalom. He would run after peace and seek peace. Ohev Esabrios. He would glow and love humanity. Umekarvim LaTorah. And he would go and bring them back to the Torah. Did he ever go to Eish HaTorah? Did he ever go to any other key? Did he ever go to JEP? Did he ever go to NCSY? Did he ever go to Chabad? Did he ever go to any of these Kiruv outreach programs? So how did he know about it? How did he know about reaching out to people, making a difference in their lives, having a strong relationship with people? Because that's what it's all about, a relationship. Because you have to understand one thing. I'm going to put a spin on it. It says that Aaron was a person that was given the ability to light the menorah. That's what God said to him. God said, you know what, Aaron, you're going to have a special gift. Your gift is going to be every day you're going to go into the temple, and you're going to light the menorah. So it says that Aaron did it. Vayas came Aaron. It says Aaron did it. So you ask the question, what did he do? He did it already. What does the Torah have to tell us? He did it. If he did it, we know he did it. So Rashi, who's the commentator on the Torah, says the following, that he did it, and it says he did it, because he did it with the same enthusiasm every day. Every day he got up, and he did the same thing every day, with the same enthusiasm as if it was the first day. You know you have a bar mitzvah boy, right? See, sometimes the boy, the first day, goes and puts on his tefillin, he's rapping. Remember when I'm talking to the men here, remember when we first put on tefillin? I don't know, did you feel good about it? You feel great about it? The bracha that we have to give our children as parents, and this is part of the relationship, we have to say to our children, to our boys, and say the same way that you put on tefillin the first time, the enthusiasm, you should have the same enthusiasm for the rest of your life. For the girls, the same way you like the Shabbos camps or you take the challah, it should be the same enthusiasm every time. Because that's what Aaron teaches us, enthusiasm, working on it. But how do you do that? It says, Vayas Kein Aaron. So let's put a spin on the words. Vayas Kein Aaron. That Aaron did it. Vayas Kein. He was Kein. He was positive. Kein is yes. He was positive. You want to have an impact on people? You want to connect with people? You want to have a relationship with your children? You want to have a relationship with your spouse? You want to have a relationship with other Jews, with neighbors, with friends? It's positive, positivity, being upbeat, being positive. Nobody wants to hear about, I'm in a bad mood. Nobody enjoys that. Oh yeah, we might enjoy that. But you want your kids to be positive, positive about mitzvot, positive about creation, positive about Torah, positive about life, positive about their studies. So let's understand something about children. Children, and we all love our children, there's a story about a child. And the child goes over to the father and says, hey, Dad, tell me how much you make an hour. How would you respond to that? Chuck came over to you and said, Dad, tell me how much you make an hour. You probably say, none of your business. Right? Or, what are you asking me that for? Or, oh, let me show you what I make an hour. Probably not. But this child goes over to his father and says, Dad, tell me what you make an hour. You make $5 an hour? You make $20 an hour? You make $150 an hour? You make $1,000 an hour? And the father looks and he goes, what are you asking me this for? He goes, I really want to know. So the father gets annoyed and says, listen, if you keep on asking me how much I make an hour, I'm going to send you to your room. So he finally goes and says, Dad, tell me, how much do you make an hour? So he looks at him and says, I think you should go to your room. And he goes to his room. And as the father is walking by the child's room, he hears the child crying. And he says, walks in. He says, what's the matter? What are you crying about? So he goes, I just want to know, how much you make an hour? So you're still asking me how much you make an hour. What do you? So he says, why do you want to ask, why is it so important to you to know how much I make an hour? And listen to what the kid says to him.
kid looks at him and says, you know why? Because you don't have any time for me, and I want to buy an hour of your time. And that's what is going on today. If you understand how children in today's society, it's not like when we were growing up. It's a different world. Everything is the iPhone, iPad, I mean, Apple knows what they're doing, right? Even the Wii, yeah. But it's spelled French. Who's the Frenchman over? How do you spell it? W-I. How do you spell Wii? What?
O-U-I.
O-U-I. It's still with the I, because everything is I. So children today are craving, and if they don't get it from parents, they'll find it someplace else. And that's why kids today are seeking other venues, seeking other things. We know that the family values that we've inculcated in our children are essential. I just met with somebody. We're talking about the Shabbat meal. We said how we sit down with the family. He goes, what are you talking about? You sit down with your family? You sit down with your kids? You have a meal together? This is something in the outside world. This is unheard of. But the understanding that we connect with the children and then connecting with our spouses. There's a famous story about Rabbi Aryeh Levine. Rabbi Aryeh Levine was a famous rabbi who lived in Jerusalem approximately 50 years ago when the state of Israel was being founded. And one day, somebody sees him walking down the street with his wife. And he says, Rabbi, where are you going? He says, I'm going to the doctor. So he says to him, you're going to the doctor? What's the matter? You don't feel well? He goes, well, to tell you the truth, my wife's leg is bothering us. So he understood that connection. You know, we're learning the Daf Yomi. Daf Yomi now is learning a section of the Talmud. Every day we learn one page, one side and another side. And it's talking about sacrifices inside the temple. Very complicated stuff. And there was one piece a couple of weeks ago that caught my eye, but I think it has a tremendous lesson. And listen to this piece. Anybody have a firstborn son over here? Anybody have a firstborn son? Okay. Are you Yisrael? Did you make a pinyan abed?
Yeah.
Okay. Pinyan abed, the redeeming of the firstborn son, I just want you to know, by the way, what are the chances of that? Do you know? What are the chances? You think, how many people have been to a pinyon haben here? How many people have been to
three pinyon
abens or three grand? Very rare. It's only 8%. Only 8% of all births, taken into account, boys, girls, about cesareans, you know, firstborns, everything. 8%. So it's very rare. So the question, you give 5 silver coins to the Kohen, right? Who's a Kohen in this room? Anybody a Kohen? No Kohanim. Okay, so you don't have the 5 coins, okay? But we have to pay the 5 coins. You have to pay 5 coins, right? I told my son, by the way, he pulls out before he's going to Israel, he's packing up his bags, he's going to Israel, and he's turning his drawers, and he pulls out one silver dollar, another silver dollar. He's got like 4 or 5 silver dollars. I go, Chaim, what do you got over here? So he goes, I'm saving up for the pinyon I've been. So I go, oh, so maybe I'll have a boy. So he's saving up his money. So the grandfather doesn't have to give it. So anyways, So the Talmud talks about the following. It says, what happens if that there's a child that's born with 2 heads? A Siamese twin. You have a Siamese twin. Now, God forbid, it should never happen. But how many coins would you give? Would you give 5? Or you give 10? So how would you test this, ladies and gentlemen? How would you test this entity? So there's a commentary on the side of the Talmud that says that this case was brought to King Solomon. And King Solomon asked the following question, dealt with in the following way, this question. He took a drop of warm water, perhaps hot, and you know the children are very sensitive to water. You know, when you put your elbow in. I always wonder why you put your elbow in. Maybe the women could tell us why you put the elbow in the water. Maybe your elbow is a little bit more sensitive to water, hot, the heat, etc. He drops a drop of water on top of one of the heads. If the other head moves, so therefore it's one central nervous system. It feels the sensation, one central nervous system, it's one entity, and you give five. And if the other head doesn't feel the sensation, you drop the warm water on the top of the head, the other head doesn't feel it. So it's two central nervous systems, this is what King Solomon said, two different entities, two different brio, two different people, whatever you want to call it. They might have two different heads, one body, etc. Separate, give 10. So everybody wants to know, so what happened? Doesn't answer. Doesn't tell us what happened. 5 or 10. But here's the clincher of it. It teaches you a tremendous musar, a tremendous lesson in life. That when one head feels the sensation of the other, you're together. You're together. And when it doesn't, you're separate. And that's the Jewish people. And that's our lives. And that's who we are. Then he says, if your child is hurting, you have to feel his pain. If your wife is upset about something, you have to understand, perhaps, and try to work out why she's upset. And if you're not understanding it, so then we're doing two different lives. We're running two different ball games here. And that's the message of Klal Yisrael. That's the message of the Jewish people, of understanding that we're all connected. And it does. I'm sorry. You want to ask a question? Go ahead.
What happens if the other head moves and the head with the water got dropped on
the? Yeah. So if the other head moves, that's right. No, that's what I mentioned. If the head moves and the other head, go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, you were speaking about the. Well, it seems that the head that the water gets dropped on will move.
Correct.
But what happens if that doesn't move?
Otherwise? The Gemara doesn't. Talmud doesn't deal with that. Doesn't mention that. So. Maybe that's a ventriloquist question. I don't know. So what we have to understand is that the Jewish people and a concept of relationships with the Jewish people is so intertwined. It starts with our families and then extends to our neighborhood, extends to our communities, and extends to all the complete concept of Am Yisrael. When something happens in Israel of a tragedy, you have to feel that pain. And if we don't feel that pain, so it's not them, it's us. Why don't we feel it? Why don't we feel about a family that gets slaughtered and a little baby who gets killed for no reason other than they're Jewish? I want to tell you something. I went this past summer, I had the opportunity to go to Eastern Europe. And it wasn't my first time there. My family comes from Poland. We wanted to know and experience as best as we could, as understand it as best as we could of what happened there 70 years ago. And as I was standing on the tracks to Auschwitz, you know, a thought went through my mind the following. I said to myself, you know, if I was living 70 years ago, so what would I do if I could get a Jew off the train? If I could take one Jew off the train, pull him off, grab him off, bribe somebody, bribe the guard, what would I do? But ladies and gentlemen, let me just tell you one thing. You probably know it. That there is, in essence, the same Holocaust going on here in the United States. Again, they're not putting us in gas chambers, but the assimilation rate in the United States is so rampant that they're on the trains to assimilation. And if we can make a difference in someone's life by exposing them to the great heritage that we have, so we're not living 70 years ago. And if God wanted each and every one of us to be an Aborigine living in Australia, we would have been. And if God wanted us to live 70 years ago in a ghetto, we would have. And if God wanted us to live 500 years ago in Spain during the Inquisition, we would have. Our destiny is that we're here at this and this time period. And that's something called hashgacha, that's called destiny, purpose, and we have our families and our children and our communities. And I guess it's all destiny that I'm here speaking to you with you tonight. Because that's what it's all about, a connection and responsibility. What is our responsibility? What is our responsibility when we come in contact with another Jew who has no connection to Judaism, doesn't know why he's Jewish? So let me tell you the following. Let me give you one point. And it's a beautiful story. Not bragging because of it, but I think it brings home the message very, very clearly. I have a leased car. And anybody who has a leased car knows that they have to change the oil. I mean, you should change the oil all the time, even if you don't have a leased car. But at least keep records of it. So my son, I told you he went to Israel, but he was learning in the yeshiva in Queens. And I would go visit him, get him a meal, sometimes go and learn with him. And I would take an opportunity. There's a place right off the Jackie Robinson Parkway that gives you a oil change. And not only that, did you ever get a Pesach special, Passover special for $100? Well, I didn't pay $100. I paid $5. I paid the guy over there $5, and for an extra tip of another $5, he makes a Pesach, Passover special every day of the week. Anyways, be it as it may, whenever I would go, I'd bring my car there to this oil place, oil changing place, to change the oil. One time, I went to change it, and they were tinkering with the car. They were doing something. I was there for an hour and a half. Now, I'm busy trying to, provide for a family. So the BlackBerry I'm using the BlackBerry, but, the BlackBerry dies at a certain point. So at an hour and a half, I decided I'm going to go to the lady who's at the front desk and say, I'm here for an hour and a half. I think it's a little long. So she says to me, listen, something happened to your car. They were doing something. And it's going to be ready soon. But I said, I'm here an hour and a half. I'm a loyal customer. Look at the computer. I can always come to your place because I want to keep the records. And, I think that I deserve compensation. I think I deserve a free oil change. I think I deserve maybe a free car wash. Maybe, something with something with what my time is. Because, sir, she says to me, I can't give it to you. You've got to go and ask the manager. So I walk outside. So I said, before I walk outside, I said to him, is he a nice guy? She goes, no. So I said, okay, thank you. So I said to him, let me ask you something. I don't know what possessed me to say this. I said, is he Jewish? He goes, yeah, he's Jewish. I go, oh, he's not a nice guy, he's Jewish. I'm sorry, apologizing to her, So I said, what am I apologizing to this lady for? And I walk outside. I said to her as I'm leaving, I go, what's his name? She goes, Ty. She goes, what kind of name is that? She goes, the name is Ty, T-Y, that's his name. I walk outside. And there's the chevra, the whole group, fixing the car and everything. I go, is the manager here? He goes, yeah, what do you want? So I said, I think I deserve compensation. He goes, you're not getting any. I should have started with you. So I saw who I was starting with. And I said, forget it. I'm not starting with this guy. Be it as it may, he said, I'll be done in a few minutes and you can take your car. And then I turn to him and I go, you're Jewish, right? So he turns to me, yeah, I'm Jewish, but I'm not Shomer Shabbat. I don't keep Shabbat. So I go, I didn't talk about Shabbos with you. So he goes, I'm Jewish, and I live in Long Island, and I got two Jewish daughters, but I'm not Shomer Shabbat like you. So I said to him, I didn't discuss it. I'm just asking you for compensation. I'm not talking about Shomer Shabbat. Now, when somebody does that to you, it's something called bageling, that they're reaching out. It's like when you're walking in New Hampshire or Vermont, and somebody sees you and says, hey, shalom. Now, he's reaching out. He's trying to say to you something. He's trying to connect with you. You're Jewish. He's Jewish. Trying to connect. So then I said to him, what's your name? So he says to me, Ty. So I go, what's your name? What's your Hebrew name? So he goes, Tuvia. So I go, Tuvia. So I go, what's your last name? Cohen. So I go, you're Cohen? So I go, no, Israelite. So I said to him, where'd you go? How do you know about this? He goes, I went to school in Barakaway. I went to Temple Bethel. I know about the stuff, but I'm not Shomer Shabbat like you. At that point, I had enough. And I said, Tuvia, Ty, whatever your name is, come here. I walk outside the Bay Area. I go, let me tell you one thing. 70 years ago, when Hitler took my relatives and your relatives and put them in the ovens, something? He didn't ask if they show me Shabbat. So let's get something straight. We're in this together. So he looks at me and goes, yeah, you're right. He melted. You might say that, but we have something special. She goes, yeah, we got something special. And I left it. I got my car. Car was ready. Got in the car. Went home. Now, what do you do with a story like that? What do? You just let it go? Do you take it as those messages, like it happened to them, didn't happen to me? Like everything outside that goes around in our lives, and we say, no, it doesn't affect me. Well, everything affects us. Every story, every event, everything affects us. It affects our families, our wives, our children. That was on a Monday. Friday morning, I didn't even tell my wife what I did. I went to a bakery and I picked up a challah. And I drove to the place. And there's the group of guys. And they said, well, here he comes again. You know, I said, what's the matter? The car's broken? So I said, no, the car's fine. And I walk in, so I go, where's Ty? He goes, he's in his office. He comes out. He goes, yeah, what do you want? What's the matter with the car? It's not working. So I go, no, Ty, two of you, whatever your name is. I said to him, this is for you. And he takes the challah in the bag. I wrapped it up nicely. And he opens it up. And he wells up with tears. And he says, you know, my wife and I are really going to enjoy this when we light the Shabbat candles. Because obviously, his wife lights the Shabbat candles. And he does what he does. Subsequently, he waits for me to come now. He says, when are you coming back? When are you giving me matzahs? When are you giving me wachalas? When are you giving me wine? Means to say, he's also talked to me about going to Israel. Because you know what? It's all about us. It's all about a great heritage that we have, the beauty of Judaism. And when you come in contact with somebody who just doesn't have it, they're reaching out. We're the last survivors, folks. There's nobody left. The game's over. Who's out there? Think about all the Jews in America. If I tell you there are 6 million Jews in America, how many Jews are connected to anything Jewish? It's us. So it's an awesome responsibility, but it's an awesome gift. And that's the idea of what Sfira, what the connection between Pesach, Passover, and Shavuot is all about. As we get closer to Torah, that's our connection. Without that, we don't have anything. That's what God gave us. And I want to thank you for allowing me to come. It's been a great, you know, if there's any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer it. I hope that it gave you what you needed tonight, a little bit of a spark, a little bit of a connection. I will speak about one thing, and I'll give it over to Rabbi Zaitchik. I wanted to tell you as follows. I live in a community named Brooklyn, New York. Whatever anybody feels about Brooklyn, I just want to tell you, it's a great community with great people. And sometimes what Project Inspire does is invite groups of different communities to meet other Jews in other communities and to experience Shabbat with other groups, with other communities. Because, you know, that's what Shabbat is all about, with other people, with friends, with family, and to see what's out there. So we've had groups come to Brooklyn from Philadelphia, from Washington, from Boston, from H. New York came. Different communities, different people have come to the community, and we give them the greatest time because it's an experience of warmth, palatial homes, good food, lectures, everything, all for free. Just because we want people to come and experience Shabbat together with other Jews. And it's a wonderful experience. I spoke to Rabbi Zaitchik about it. We have on the table June 12th. June 18th. We'd like to welcome everybody to come, families, men and women, children. It's just a wonderful experience. It'd be our pleasure to have everybody come. And if we could be, you know, accommodating, if anybody needs any kind of accommodations. But it's a group experience. And you'll have the most phenomenal experience that I could tell you. You'll come away from there saying, wow, this was a Shabbos to really remember. I want to thank you very much. And any questions?
Questions, comments, reservations?
Okay, I'll leave that to you. Okay. Yeah,
anybody? Last of time.
Flatbush, yes. And I gave Rabbi Zaitchik some flyers, and I hope you'll join us.
We have
I made 20. I didn't know there were
okay.
So many people here tonight.
Bruce, would you want to kindly give some of that? We'd like to, first of all, thank Rabbi Zakatinsky for his very, very warm presentation. It wasn't just a cerebral presentation. It was a presentation that really touched our neshama.
Thank you.
So we're very grateful to you. If that's a taste of what the Shabbos will be like, I'm planning to come. Thank you, Big Yashikov. And we also want to thank, of course, Karen and Mitch for their very warm hospitality. I would like to announce a couple of things with regard to Jeff. Number one, as we're getting closer to the summer, we do hope to have an additional lecture in mid-June that we're planning at the present time. And we do not have a monthly lecture during July and August, so we've got one more to go. However, we do have classes straight through the summer. We have weekly classes. They're indicated on the on our website, jeffofwestchester.com. If you'd like to keep abreast of what's happening at Jeff, just go on to the website and click on, and you'll get emails, and we've got a lot happening. We've got some wonderful people. And one special event that I'd like to bring to your attention is the fact that on June 5th, Baruch Hashem, we've been privileged to do this now for 22 years, and we've met so many wonderful people. And on June 25th, we are looking forward to our 22nd anniversary dinner. And if you'd like to get more information about the dinner, the accompanying journal, that's really what keeps us going year-round. As you know, all of our events, our classes, our lectures, there's no cost involved, but the dinner is really our mainstay of existence. So that information is certainly also readily available. I want to just encourage you to seriously consider joining us for that Shabbos, June 18th. Jeff, by the way, we've done Shabbatonim in the past as a group. We've gone to a number of different communities, I would say about 8-10 different times, and every single time we went, the people who came away found that the most difficult part of the experience was Havdalah, the end of Shabbos, leaving that very wonderful atmosphere of inspiration that we can only create when we are together. Don't miss out on a very special experience, June 18th. It's been a delight to have you all, and you're all invited to participate in to enjoy the refreshments that are available in the dining room. And in 5 minutes, we hope to have a minion for a Myriv, God willing. We count Sphere at the end of the minion. Yesterday we counted 22, and so in 5 minutes we hope to start with a minion. Have a safe trip home.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, your turn.